Hey, it's Michael Waits. How are you doing?
Hey, it's Todd. I'm good, thank you. How are you?
I'm awesome. Hey, Todd, you're at Harvard, right?
Yes, I am.
Good for you. Is it starting to get kind of cold in Boston?
Is, especially coming from Thailand, where the temperature is like 30.
Every day?
It's around, right now it's around 8, but I think it's not the degree that's bad, it's more the wind.
I can't stop laughing. I grew up in Boston in Connecticut, and I just think about how much snow and how much cold I had to endure, and I just think about the dichotomy of growing up in a place where, the average daily temperature is 30 degrees Celsius, and in Boston in the wintertime it can get below 0 Celsius. I just can't imagine how you're going to deal with it.
I've never seen snow before, so I guess that's a perk that I'm looking forward to.
I wouldn't call that a perk, but I'll leave that to you. Did you travel a lot with your family when you were younger?
Yeah, not I guess pretty average, like during summer holidays and stuff.
Okay, so you weren't like one of these kids that went like skiing in Switzerland or went to Nagano and stuff like
No,
that in
I've never been
Japan.
there before. Yeah.
Oh my God. So
Mostly around Asia.
why Boston? Why Harvard? Like if you, 'cause you could have gone to the West Coast where the weather was slightly better. What was it about
Yeah.
Harvard that was the draw?
I guess I'm not particularly concerned about the weather. I mean, I prefer cold weather actually. I went to Stanford once in the West Coast and I actually like the cold weather more.
Okay, I'm gonna remind you of that later, by the way, when you cannot see from your dormitory to the building across the way because it's snowing so hard.
Yeah, I guess these things you gotta experience and probably gonna regret it, but so far so good, I think, the weather-wise. Anyway, the reason I chose Harvard, I think, is because of the interdisciplinary nature of the university. Because I feel like from my career in high school and my experiences in high school, I'm not encapsulated in like only in the sciences or the engineering, but I've been, I guess, passionate in the humanities and the social sciences and history and all those things as well.
Cool.
So yeah, that's one of the main reasons. And the other reason is because I feel like there's so many opportunities and resources at Harvard that Harvard offers that no matter what I choose to pursue, it's always there's always like an available opportunity, an available door.
Right. So I have to reiterate this. My family's from Boston. My mom and dad grew up there. I grew up in Boston and I went to college in Connecticut. And I'm sort of biased to the East Coast, not because of the weather, but because of the concentration of students in great universities, right? The West Coast, Stanford, Berkeley, all these like amazing, right? Universities. But in Boston, when school is out of session, I don't know what the statistics are exactly, but the population of the city drops dramatically. And what that means is that there's just a great student population there across the board, right? And that's a great environment to be in. You went to high school where in Bangkok?
I went to Romardine International School,
You did.
RIS.
Yeah. And what kind of program do they have there?
So we offer both the IB and the AP.
Okay,
So it's
great.
both the, I guess, the American and the British version. So I guess that's a great opportunity for students because each program has different advantages and disadvantages.
Sure. Which program did you do?
I kind of took both. So I took AP in my sophomore year and I took the full IB diploma in my junior and senior year, but I also self-studied for a few APs as well. So I guess at the end, it was a mixture of both programs.
Which APs did you self-study?
AP Physics and AP Calculus.
Calculus. I took AP Calculus as well, so welcome to the club. I don't think it's changed that much in the 30 or so years that I took it and you took it. So your
Yeah,
friend, so your
calculus is
friend,
still the same.
yeah, exactly. I don't think it's going to change much from now on either. Quantum physics might change a little bit. So your friends tell me that you're an inventor. Do you want to tell me a little bit about the types of things that you were working on when you were in high school?
So my first invention started in my freshman year. It was about an ironing board. It sounds very trivial, but so I guess the more technical term is a thermoelectric ironing board. So what I noticed was that, and like especially living in Thailand in Southeast Asia, Ironing clothes is very something that people do often. And what I realized is that when people iron their clothes, they lose a lot of heat energy. And so what I figured out was that instead of just ironing clothes and losing all those heat energy, I sought a way that you can iron your clothes and convert that heat waste back into electricity. So for example, you might be ironing your clothes and then charge your phone off of that waste heat at the same time.
How did that work?
It was successful, so I was able to make it work, and it was able to charge your phone.
Right, but I mean, exactly how did it work? In other words, the board, so...
Oh, the mechanism of...
Yeah, what was the mechanism? And I'll tell you why I asked, because when you talked about a thermoelectric ironing board, I thought what you were doing was heating the board as well as heating the iron, because that sounds cool to me, right, where you put the shirt or the pants or the suit down on the board and there's natural heat, but that's not what you're saying, right? So how did the mechanism work?
So it's actually the same as when you iron your clothes normally. So mm-hmm. you would just place down the clothes normally and just iron the clothes on the board. Mm-hmm. But I guess the difference is that the board is not just a wood board. It's not just like a normal flat board, but it's the mechanism underlying it is below the board, in which I coupled the board with something called thermoelectric coolers. So I guess what kickstarted my idea was I was playing around with this CPU of my grandmother a few years back, and I noticed this, it's a white ceramic looking thing, and then it's actually called technically thermoelectric coolers. Okay. And what they're usually used for is once we pass in electricity into the thermoelectric cooler, what the result is that one side of the ceramic tile is hot and the other side is cold. And so what people do is that they usually apply the cold side to things they want to cool down, for example, your CPU or your computer. So then based on this mechanism, I think that what I could do is reverse the process. So find situations that there's a temperature gradient, or in other words, when one side is hot and one side is cold, mm-hmm. and using that situation to reverse the process and extract electricity out. And so what we notice is that when you iron your clothes, there's a huge temperature difference between the board on top and the board at the bottom, where it's just ambient air. And so using this situation, I was able to extract out the heat gradient and therefore the electricity.
And then what would you do? So you use that as a mechanism to create electricity, and then what, built a USB port into it so then you could charge your phone?
Yes. So so basically, like, the when, like, as you can see, when you iron your clothes, the heat is not even throughout the board, and therefore the electricity you get out is also unequal. It keeps fluctuating, basically. And so what I also created, but this thing is not novel, but the thermoelectric ironing board is, but what I created was a circuit that basically regulates the current such that when it feeds in into your phone, it's constant. Because if the electricity that's fed into your phone is fluctuating, then that could cause like damage to your phone.
Right. I mean, that's what surge protectors are for, right?
Yeah.
So did you actually build this mechanism? And if you did build it, did your family use it at home? Did you turn it into a cellular
product? We do, actually.
In the ironing board room at your house.
I was actually filing for a patent.
Were you
really?
Was that? I was going to say, in the ironing room at your house. So, like, whoever's ironing is also charging phones for people.
Yes. We actually use it back home.
That's awesome.
And I guess that was my first invention. And then from that point, I got more interested in biotechnology. And my second major research project, and the reason I say major is because obviously there's many, I guess, failed project in the way.
Sure. I mean, that's what inventing is, right? It's inventing, remember, is not, I like to say innovation is not about like just having this eureka moment. It's about iterating things, right?
Yes, definitely. Yeah. So after, I guess, trying out many things, the one I got caught up with was, a biotech research project on drug-resistant tuberculosis. I don't want to go into much details. It's very like the jargon is very technical, but mm-hmm. I guess the idea of the project was currently the process to diagnose drug-resistant tuberculosis takes around 20 to 30 days. And the reason is because it takes so much time to observe whether the bacteria actually grows, because if it does grow, then it means that the bacteria is resistant to the drug that you treat it. And so what I invented was a biosensor that indirectly measure the rate of protein secretion such that we can determine whether the bacteria is drug resistant in around 5 to 6 days, which is much faster than the current method.
So how come no one's done this before? TB, right, tuberculosis, disease that's been well known for decades, yeah, if not a century, right? So how come no one's done this before? And why was this so interesting to you? Because it's very different than the thermal cooling and the energy creation that you were doing with the ironing.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I think what distinguishes my project is that currently what people do is based on genetic technology. And with that focus, so there's this, I guess, discrepancy between speed and cost. So the genetic technology that people are really focused on nowadays, it can minimize the time to around the same time as my invention, but the cost is much higher. And therefore, the gold standard that the world uses is based on the 30 days and not the genetic technology method.
So everyone's comfy with 30 days. They just figure that's the limit based on the sort of cost effectiveness of the methodologies, yes, that are already in place.
Yeah. I would not say that my method is the fastest, but I would say cost-wise, with cost and being awareness of the cost, then it would be quite a great improvement compared to other inventions.
Got it. So, I mean, I guess we could go on and on about things that you've invented. It's interesting to me that you've done this when you're in high school, but yeah, when you get to university, what do you decide to study then? And there is a dichotomy, right, between sort of the energy creation, the tuberculosis. The real common thread, though, is sensors, I guess, energy, and also science, yeah?
Yeah. So right now I'm planning to study computer science and statistics.
Got it.
So yeah, maybe a double major, I'm not sure.
Okay. And how does that dovetail into what you're going to do later, right? I mean, that's not that far away from what you were doing in high school, in the sense that it's very sort of scientific related. Can I ask you this question, though? While you're doing all these inventing when you're in high school, is your family in business in Thailand?
No, we don't have a business.
Okay, that's even more interesting. So while you're like mucking around in the basement, I know you probably don't have a basement, but you know, ideally inventors are always downstairs with like the lights off inventing things. When you're doing that, like, what are your mom and dad thinking? Like, are they calling you, Todd, it's time for dinner kind of thing? And you're like, wait a second, I'm solving tuberculosis downstairs. Just give me a few more minutes. Is that what it's like?
Sort of, yeah. I mean, I work in my bedroom, so it's not in the basement. So my room is really messy.
I'm not sure a teenager's bedroom is much different than a basement, but fair enough.
Right. Well, for the ironing board one, it was like all these circuits and wires in my bedroom. So I guess it was all my projects were to some extent quite risky, life-threatening, because tuberculosis is also like very dangerous. But yeah, I did not have to do the tuberculosis in my house because that was not allowed by the government. What I did was I started off working on sensor and like detecting proteins and stuff that were not dangerous.
Right.
And so starting from that idea, after tinkering around and playing with that, and then I proposed my project to the government. It's some research agency in Thailand. And then they were able to find me like an appropriate laboratory and a mentor that had like the resource and also the samples that can test my biosensor.
Okay. But this brings up another question. You know, you're a high school student. You're a great high school student. You're going, you know, Ramradi is a great high school. There are a bunch of great high schools in Bangkok, actually. So you know, there's an irony of riches here when it comes to the ability to get educated, particularly at the high school level.
Right.
But who did you know in the government, or is there an application process that you have to go through, or like, what is that like? I don't understand how that works at all.
So since like freshman year, I applied to this program in Thailand called Junior Science Talent Project.
Got it. Okay. So you've been thinking about this for a long time.
Yes. So I guess that kind of opened a lot of doors for me, because the program itself qualifies around 60 students across the country.
Okay.
And what it does is that it's a government agency where they give you funding for any research projects you have in mind. And they'd also find you appropriate mentor and also like the appropriate laboratories and materials to implement the research. Wow. So I think that was a huge...
That's a super cool program. Bridge.
Yeah, because like coming from a high school student, like research was not as emphasized as I guess like when you get into the industry or like college. So I think that was a huge like bridge to the field of research for me.
So it sounds like you had a pretty intense high school experience, right? And to I don't know these days, but to get into Harvard, did you have to take SATs, ACTs, or is it just an application process these days?
I did, yeah.
You did both,
unfortunately.
Right? No, unfortunately. Yes. But I mean, you must have done okay. Otherwise, you wouldn't have gotten in. But now that you're in school, and this is a question that I like to ask a lot of the kids that have gone through sort of the IB program, the obviously the AP programs and stuff in Bangkok, right? Because schooling here is hard. It's not like it's world class or above world class. It's really intense. When you get to university in the United States, Harvard obviously is no slouch of a place. I've spoken to people from, you know, from Berkeley and from Vassar and, all, you know, Claremont and stuff like that. And it's none of it's easy, right? But in relation to what you were doing when you were in high school, do you find it much more difficult at Harvard? About the same? Like, what's the time management like? I'm just curious what that transition is like for you.
Yeah, I think it's much more difficult. But coming from the IB and the AP program, I feel like that was a great help in terms of responsibility and time management.
Got it.
But with the rigors of the course here and the environment, it's pretty intense. I mean, the pace is much faster and the workload is much more. But I guess it's not too much of a change.
Yeah. And I guess so. But how about living alone, right? In other words, I presume while you were at Normandy, mm-hmm. you're still living with your mom and dad. Do you have brothers and sisters as well?
Yeah, I have one younger brother. He's currently a senior at RIS.
Okay, so you guys are really close in age. Just like my brother and I were a year apart as well. So I know what that's like. But now that you're on your own, like, do you find the transition at least interesting?
Initially it was, I guess, pretty sad. I mean, leaving your parents who you live with for like...
Your whole life, basically.
18 years. It's a huge change. But with like all the work and stuff, it kind of helps you like transition to this new phase in life. Cause like without work, then you kind of overthink about all these like emotions. But with the work and the new friends, then I always have someone to fall back on and always have someone to talk to. And I think that was a huge help in terms of emotions and, you know, homesick and all those kind of things.
Yeah, it's weird how you get to build like a different kind of relationship with somebody, right? In the sense that your mom and dad are your mom and dad, your brother's always there. You don't get to choose them per se. Now you're stuck in a room or a suite with a roommate or roommates, and you've just got to figure out, okay, they're different than regular friends in high school because those friends in high school went home. These guys never go home. They're in my home, right?
Yeah.
It's just a different way to deal with people. It's kind of cool, I think.
So I live with two roommates. One is from Kansas and one from New Haven. So we all bring like different background and stories and bring in different lifestyles and stuff. So it's really interesting. And I think the dorm here is also really nice. Like it's really large and spacious. And they always have like, so what I really like about Harvard so far is something called classroom to table. So like you can always propose to the student agency that you want to maybe take this professor to lunch. And so basically you can go out for free food with your professor and talk about cool things, which is always like really fun and something I always look forward to every week.
Wait, so you literally have the ability, because Harvard's a big school, right? I don't know how many students there are, but it's more than a couple of thousand. So you can literally go to a professor or through some mechanism, say, I want to have Professor, I'm making up a name, McKenna, come with me and have lunch and chit-chat and stuff. And then they'll take you out for like an hour and just talk about class or talk about life. What is that like?
Yeah, that's basically the process. So it's really simple. So you apply to like like an agency at Harvard where they evaluate your proposal. It's really short. So you can just say like, I want to take this professor to lunch to talk about public health, to talk about biotechnology, for example. And so you go out for like an hour or two to any like restaurant in Harvard Square or like close by. And I think you have a budget of $30 per person, which is pretty large.
That's a lot.
Yeah.
Could you imagine that in Bangkok, $30 per person?
Yeah, that's a lot. That's like some premium food right there.
Premium food. That's a good lunch. But that's really cool. And that's a great way to build this camaraderie, not just between students, but between the professors and the students as well. That's super cool.
Yeah.
So your roommates are from Kansas and from New Haven.
Yes.
And you're from Bangkok. So when you first met them, did they have any idea where Thailand was? Like, did you go through this process of explaining to them stuff?
Well, they knew Thailand from the, I guess, delicious food that we have. But other than the realms of like the culinary realm, they didn't really know much about Thailand geographically and the culture and stuff. So I guess I had to introduce that aspect to my roommates, but they all seemed very interested in the culture and stuff. And actually, we just had a Thai festival today at the Harvard Square. So we had a few dances and music, which was really cool.
That is cool. There's kind of a, and I don't know if it's just proximity bias on my part, right? I've lived in Thailand for almost 7 years now, since the end of 2011. But I've been coming to Thailand, you know, since 1998, right? So there's a little bit of bias in the things that I say about Thailand, right? I like it a lot. But there seems to be a little bit of a Thailand boom going on globally, right? Where, you know, at least particularly between Japan and Thailand, the visa rules have changed. So a lot of Thai people go to Japan now. And because of that, Japanese people are becoming more familiar with Thailand. But globally, the Thai food is becoming more prominent. It seems to be like a little bit of a boomlet going on, no?
Yeah. Like right now, I think we have like four restaurants, Thai restaurants in Harvard Square, which is really awesome because
that is.
I definitely miss Thai food coming here. And I think it's probably one of the best food I've had since I've been in the United States.
You think? Have you had lobster and shrimp and clam chowder and all that stuff?
I forgot to mention this. So like beginning, like before classes start, Harvard had like, I think, three dinners where there were like unlimited lobsters. That was really cool. Especially like coming from Bangkok where lobsters is really expensive.
Really expensive.
And having like hundreds of lobsters in front of you was quite a scene.
Yeah, when I was a little boy, my father's friend was a lobster fisherman, so lobster was just there. Cool. Yeah, it was just there. It's really cool.
Yeah.
So you've done all this sort of scientific work, right? Whether it's science, technology, engineering, math, this stuff seems to, you seem very comfortable with this. How about business? Like, how do you turn that stuff into a business? Or how do you, what's your perspective on studying about business as well?
Yeah. So from my experience doing all these research, once I came to Harvard, what I realized is that I didn't really want to just stop at research and just, you know, because I feel like from my past experiences, it always ends at like a paper, a published paper. And like, for example, I feel like I should be able to bridge the gap between, I guess, the research process and implementing it in the real world. And so once I got into Harvard, I've been, I guess, exploring new venues in business and I guess all the clubs that has the intersection of science, engineering with business, such that I can somehow implement the research I have done and will do in the future. So some clubs I have participated in is the Harvard Financial Analyst Club. The other one is Harvard Data Ventures. So I think this one is really cool because it focuses on the intersection of data science. And so we're just looking at the huge amount of data that every business has and then trying to, I guess, extract insights from these data such that we can improve the business. And I think that's a great bridge for me to, I guess, be introduced into the business realm and, I guess, take back those experiences into my research and somehow implement them in the future.
Yeah, it's a really interesting topic for me. So I'm not a scientist. But I'm a very interested technologist, and I've been thinking about how to use data for the longest time. And I'm about to announce another podcast that I'll be doing with a professor at Berkeley called DataWise. This concept of data and how businesses use data is really important to me. I'd love to follow up with you maybe in a few months and find out what more you've learned from that over time. But this transition as well, right? Like you said, you've used this word a lot, intersection. And I think that going forward, this intersection of subjects is going to be really important, right? Science doesn't exist in a vacuum. Business doesn't exist in a vacuum. And if you can somehow find a way to meet at the intersection of both of those things and other combinations, I think now you've created some real power.
Yeah. I guess looking back in retrospect, all my research for at the intersection of disciplines, it was never like one particular field, because what I realized is that after doing so many research, I always come out of the research a different person for every project I've done. For example, the tuberculosis project, I came in as like a destined biotechnology, like very interested in biotechnology. But then once it came out, then I was more more interested in like data science and technology, and was well equipped with many other skills and disciplines, because it was always this interdisciplinary nature of my research that I realized was what I enjoyed the most.
Yep. I agree. And look, you'd be in very good company, and maybe this is a good way to end, but Steve Jobs was also really famous for saying, you know, technology alone isn't enough, right? It's the intersection of liberal arts and technology that really gave power. And that's the thing that he tried to sort of infuse at Apple, is that building technology for technology's sake is great, but if you can infuse it and intersect it with liberal arts, then that's where the real power is. Anyway,
yeah.
Look, I don't want to take up any of your time. This is an awesome conversation, and I look forward to catching up with you again, hopefully in a few months, to find out what else you've been learning while you were at Harvard. I really just want to thank you so much for your time.
Okay, thank you so much. I really appreciate this and really enjoyed talking to you. Thank you.